Come down. 3, 2, 1. Why are you in such a crabby mood?
See, this could be a really good podcast for a change because I am in a really crabby mood today.
Why? What's up?
So the city of Toronto is repairing the drainage in our street, which I am happy with because there's a lot of neighborhoods in Toronto that have flooding problems. So when we were at the Board of Governors, my wife got a note from the company that they were going to be doing some work in front of our house. And first of all, they jammed the note so hard in the mailbox, it knocked the mailbox off the wall.
What?
Yeah. So we have to figure out what we're going to do with that. That's okay. It happens. It's an accident. But here's the thing that really made me crazy. So I get home late last night and I get dropped off at the house and there's a trench in front of my driveway, which is okay. They have to do the work. I get it. But in the note it said, if we are going to cut off use of your driveway, we'll warn you in advance first. There was no warning.
There wasn't in the note that knocked over your mailbox?
There was no warning. It said that if we...
That's all it said.
If we do work that eliminates your driveway, we're going to tell you. So there was no warning.
Yeah.
So this morning I wake up. The workers are out there. I go out there, and I am polite to workers. They're doing their job. They're trying to earn a living like all of us. I have no problem. I just ask, you know, how long is this going to be? How soon can I take my car out of the garage? About a week.
Whoa, a week?
Yeah.
I'm like, how big is this ditch?
It's, you know, it would damage your car if you drove through it. I don't drive a truck anymore. I drive a sedan.
Yeah.
So I was like, ooh, how am I going to get into work today to do the podcast and Oilers Blues tonight?
So, wait a minute. Public transportation like the rest of the normals? I'm Elliot Friedman after all.
No, I can do that. I got no problem. But at late at night, I don't want to do the public transportation after we're off
Uber,
the air.
You can grab a cab.
We can do all of that. Yeah, but it's a week, okay? It's a week. You know, you got to do this. So got my car. My neighbor has a curb on the side, but there's an opening. So I had to drive my car over my lawn onto the neighbor's driveway and out. And needless to say, now we've got to redo a chunk of the lawn.
Yep.
So
did you get a parking pass for the week from the city?
Yes, we're good. Like they say that if you get a ticket, we'll reimburse you. The only thing that concerns me is what if it snows because you're worried about the snowplow drivers, like they box people. If you're dumb enough to park on the street in Toronto when it snows.
Or if you have to park on the street, Elliot. Well, you don't have a driveway.
You should know that this is what they're going to do. They're going to box you in.
Yeah.
But I'll solve that problem when that comes. But I'm in a really bad mood because I had to drive over my front lawn today to come into work.
That's put you in a sour mood?
It does. It puts me in a really sour mood.
On the scale of things that could go wrong in a day that should put you in a sour, like I get it. I understand. Like we've had and we're going to do renovations in the spring and summer. So I know that I'm heading into Headacheville. But really, on the scale of things that have ever gone wrong in your life,
it's very low. Like, I get it. There's much bigger things to worry about. But, you know, you come back from Georgia. It's late at night. I'm up till 6 a.m. writing the blog. And then I'm coming into work today. And that's all work. I accept that. But, you know, you're a little bit crabby. You're a little bit off.
Yeah.
And then as I'm driving over my own lawn, I'm thinking, what? Like, why? Why do I have to do this today? So, yes, I'm in a crabby mood.
Should be a wonderful podcast then. Let's get it started. 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the GMC Terrain with Crabby Boy.
An exciting day for the National Hockey League. I am delighted to announce that the Board of Governors unanimously approved a plan of expansion that will bring a National Hockey League team to Seattle.
The wait is over for hockey fans in Seattle. The NHL announced today the city will have an expansion hockey team for play starting in 2020. 2021.
Now, there's a fan poll in the newspaper there on the hockey team, the Seattle Sockeyes. And I thought, that sounds like a great hockey name, like Sock Eyes.
Something you wake up with after a long night out.
I think it's a home run. I think it's going to be fabulous. And I didn't like adding teams one at a time. I wish we waited and brought in two and kept even numbers, but I'm happy with today.
We have the Battle of Alberta, the Battle of Ontario. How does the Battle of the Pacific Northwest sound? A lot of people liking that today with the NHL officially coming to Seattle.
From the look of the season ticket deposits, fan support is very strong. When the NHL considers you for an expansion team, they want to see what the support might be like. They're generally looking for 10,000 deposits on season tickets. NHL Seattle got that in 12 minutes. There were over 25,000 deposits in an hour and shut things down after receiving 33,000. At that point, a waiting list was open.
Seattle, the NHL is thrilled to welcome you.
We will park plenty of time to talk about Team 32, Seattle, the Seattle Blanks, in a couple of moments here. But first, want to let you know, this is a week where, once again, we will drop two podcasts. This podcast, and much like last week with the Brian Boyle pod, we'll be dropping another one early Monday morning. This one with Andrew Ferentz, former NHLer, Pittsburgh Penguins, Calgary Flames, Boston Bruins, Edmonton Oilers. We talk about a number of different things, some big stuff on the Oilers, a lot of stuff on the Boston Bruins, a lot of stuff about his environmental work as well, stuff away from hockey. And this is a story that he told about one of the more interesting games that you were at, Stanley Cup playoffs, Boston Bruins, Montreal Canadiens. Ferentz scores and gives the crowd in Montreal the finger. Here's Andrew Ferentz, preview of next week.
Now, first of all, my favorite game I've ever covered of yours was the glove malfunction.
Yes. Okay,
so use the ironic quotation marks around malfunction, first of all.
So let's set the scene. You guys are down 2-0 in that series, first round against Montreal.
Yeah.
And that was one of the best first round series I ever covered. Nathan Horton scoring in overtime in game 7 to win it. And you score a huge goal. Was that a big goal in Montreal?
Yeah, it was a big goal in Montreal.
And you gave the finger to the crowd.
Yes.
And then at the end of the game, first of all, I couldn't believe you came out to talk to the media. Like, I was in the room. I was astonished when they told me that you were going to talk. And then, so you said your glove malfunction, and I tweeted it out, and I walked to the bar, and Glenn Healy looked at me and goes, "How could you tweet that? You know that is total BS. How could you even tweet that?" I said, "Glenn, I got to report what he says."
Oh, and Glenn hated me too, because we had our button. We were button heads at the PA.
Yes.
So I remember his commentary after I did it. I watched the game, and he was just roasting me on there too.
I'm like, he was.
"Play it slower, Glenn. Thanks a lot, man." So it was obviously contentious. Bruins, Montreal, I could probably fill an hour of stories of that rivalry, of the things that my wife witnessed in the stands, and Montreal semi-trucks parking outside of our hotel honking horns and people throwing stuff at us and rocking our bus and, you know, the stuff they'd yell at Chara on the walk towards the game is, like, absurd, right? So, I mean, it builds up.
We're going to ask you about all this after.
It's insane.
Tell this story.
So, obviously, emotions are running high. Earlier in that shift, I got hit by somebody, maybe Plekanec in my own end. And, you know, all the fans banging on the glass and, you know, yelling at me and stuff like that. And so I went down the ice and just got a lucky kind of bounce and, you know, putting up on Price. And it was just primal emotion. You know, one of those things, man. I don't know. There's no good excuse, but looking back, I think it's hilarious. Like,
Who came up with the glove malfunction idea?
So I probably shouldn't incriminate anybody, but I got called back into the back room where the coaches and everybody, you know, management and stuff is, and they just kind of played the video for me and looked at me and said, like, what are you doing? Because nobody on the bench knew I did it, right? Because, like, we're just playing the game, and so they're not watching TV. Like, they're just playing the game. And so they're like, well, like, you're going to have to say something. And I think it was that year, earlier that year, who was it on the Islanders? Somebody got suspended for a hand gesture, I think, towards Avery.
Oh, James Wisniewski.
Yeah,
Avery.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
So
yes.
I think he got suspended, I think.
Was it two? I think one or two.
Anyways, I mean, you're in playoffs and you're against the like you do anything you can to not get in trouble. So, like, true story, those were brand new gloves that game. They were legitimately brand new gloves. And I said, well, new gloves, they're stiff.
mean, just so happens the one digit didn't move.
So it was a terrible excuse. And it is actually, like, honestly, looking back, it's quite embarrassing. I should have just owned it and whatnot, but I was honestly scared to get suspended. And so I just lied, you know, quite frankly. And it's stupid looking back on it, but, you know, in the heat of moment, you do a lot of stupid things to win. And so now my daughter, you know, gets Instagrammed, you know, like all the time, all her buddies at school all play hockey. So every time it's on like funny hockey clips or whatever Instagram account, like best Sally ever, you know, she gets like all these messages from her buddies and she's like, oh, thanks, Dad.
Okay, so more from Andrew Ferentz on Monday when pod number two for the week drops. So a quick thought on that one.
My quick thought is whenever somebody does something controversial now, I'm going to preface the question by saying, answer this as if you've been retired for 5 years. What were you thinking out there?
So there you go. So plenty from Andrew Ferentz, and much of it we think could very much make headlines. You'll find out on Monday some interesting opinions and interesting thoughts and some interesting flashlights being shone on certain teams in certain eras. I'm trying to be as vague as possible as to try not to tip off what's about to drop on Monday, but might be a podcast you'll probably want to listen to, specifically if you're an Oilers fan or if you're a Boston Bruins fan. Some real gems in there. So that comes up on Monday. Okay, but the big story of the week, looks like we'll have to rename the pod. You'll have to rename the blog because Team 32 is on the horizon. You were there in Georgia when it all happened. Seattle joins the mix.
It was a good event. First of all, it was a really slick media conference from the NHL's perspective. If you remember when they went back and introduced Las Vegas, it was kind of a missed opportunity. They were in Vegas. They should have had a total Vegas experience, and they kind of missed that one. Mm-hmm. And this one, I thought it was really slick. It was really well done. It added some real buzz. There was a huge Seattle media contingent. It would have been a pretty boring stayed Board of Governors meeting if the whole Seattle thing hadn't been there. I'm curious about this. I love the idea of Krakens for the team name. I don't think there's any chance it's going to happen, but it's so ridiculous. I absolutely love it. Yeah, I
love
know
the
where
name, but everyone just take a moment for yourself here. Hit pause on the podcast and think about what the nicknames might be.
Yes,
you'll shoot down Krakens pretty fast.
That's why I know it's not going to happen, but they have done a lot of work on Seattle over the years. This has been a target city of theirs for a long time. I mentioned that to the commissioner at the end of the press conference on Tuesday, and he disagreed with that. He said, well, no, we just do our due diligence, and when something comes to us that works, we make sense. I think it's a bit more in-depth than that. You don't, two months after the Golden Knights begin playing, say we're granting an application to Seattle and Seattle only, unless A, you know what's going to happen, and B, you really want to go there. I think they know what they're doing. I was really impressed by David Bonderman. Strikes me as just a quiet, calm,
rich,
no BS, wealthy guy who knows what he's doing. And anyone who knows Todd Leiwicki knows what he's doing too. And as worried as I think a lot of us were about Vegas, is this really going to work? And it did. You're feeling the opposite way about Seattle. You're so convinced it's going to work, you're almost wondering, how can it not? Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a big hit.
I think Vegas softened the landing for them, or sort of removed a lot of questions.
Yes.
Of how this thing, because at that press conference, and I talked to Todd Leiwicki right after for our Wednesday night program, St. Louis Blues and Edmonton Oilers, be part of our intermission discussion, it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of, why does this make sense? How is this going to work? I think the Vegas success has kind of removed that line of questioning for expansion teams, at least in the short term.
Here. Well, you look at Vegas and you sit there and you say, okay, it had some hockey history with the IHL and some of the teams there, but you don't think of it as this is going to work necessarily. And the fact it worked and it was such a success, I think it has erased a lot of questions. You're totally right about that. It has eliminated our doubt, especially in a market that has such a big hockey history as Seattle does. The tougher thing for me is I just don't think a lot of these teams are going to make the same mistake stocking the roster with Vegas that they did. That is going to make the Seattle challenge much more difficult.
Pause on that for a sec. What do you think the major mistakes were?
We'll lose one player. If we have to lose a player, we'll lose a player.
We're not going to lose two or three.
Three more. Minnesota, the Tuck and Hall of thing to protect, whether Dumba. It was Matt Dumba or another D, teams aren't going to do that anymore. They'll say, we'll lose one. I also am not sure that the trades will be as rich to avoid losing certain guys. Vegas got a ton of extra draft picks, gave them a whole bunch of flexibility. Not convinced that's going to happen with Seattle. I think those are going to be the bigger challenges.
Now, one of my questions, and this is selfish TV question, but you know, with Jerry Bruckheimer there, and we always talk about how can you do TV different? How can you do hockey on TV different? Do you think Seattle does hockey on TV different? Jerry Bruckheimer's there.
I'm curious to see how much of a hand he's going to be able to do things. There's no question that the belief among a lot of the Seattle media is that Jerry Bruckheimer's going to have a lot to do with the look of the team, which makes a lot of sense. Maybe they'll be called the Seattle CSIs. I don't know. But
if I don't get Johnny Depp on a zip line on game number one, I'm going to feel ripped off, Elliot.
That's right. You should. But, you know, the league reminded everybody that they have final say in that pretty funny exchange with Bettman on the stage.
The team name. Where do we stand with the team name?
I'll defer to the gentleman on my left or right on the team name, although the league does get to approve it. The decision for 21-22 actually turned out to be fairly easy.
Now an expansion draft will be held in our building. Our players will skate on that training center in time for our first camp, and we know opening day will be truly spectacular. So waiting a little longer seemed to make a lot of sense, and we ultimately agreed with the league.
Todd, you didn't answer the question about the name.
I was going to let you shag that, Commissioner.
Not my decision in the first instance.
Yes, we're aware of that. I'm very proud of the record that we have so far. We were unanimous in the city council vote. We got through the EIS without challenge, and we're going to try and do this right as well.
But, again, there was a big article the other day I saw somewhere about the changes that are coming to television. I can totally see it. You know, and Jeff, I sit here, that's 3 years away. I mean, I have a saying, I could be hit by a bus in 3 years. I mean, God only knows what's going to happen between now and then.
You might not be able to get out of your driveway in three years. Who knows at this rate?
There might still be the work going on, yes.
I am curious how active, and specifically Bruckheimer, because now if you're the NHL, you have Jerry Bruckheimer in the mix.
Yep. Okay? He's wanted to be in it for a long time.
And yeah, of course. I mean, there was, you know, the flirtation with Anaheim, trying to buy Pittsburgh. There was a Vegas situation. So he's been knocking at the door for a number of years. And now Bruckheimer is in. I'm curious what this group plans to do or how active this group plans to be with the Board of Governors. Like, if you bring Jerry Bruckheimer in and you're the NHL – how much do you lean on him for how do we market this for the next wave? What is the look of the NHL? Like, how much part of the BOG mix from a creative point of view do you think the Seattle group will
be? It's a great question. I don't have a good answer for that right now. You assume Todd Ledwicky will be because they all know him and they respect him and they like him. So you get the sense that he'll be a voice that they really listen to. I don't know. I think it's a good question. I just hope that they do what Vegas has done and they do what Nashville has done and they make Seattle a part of what is Seattle is a part of what they are.
So what is that though?
Well, obviously
Vegas is honest about Vegas.
They have to pay a lot of grunge music and skate out of a giant coffee cup. Like that's what they have to do.
That is the stereotype.
Yes.
But, I mean, we've talked about this before.
It has to rain inside the arena.
Okay, so it's the Seattle Outcast, or Overcast, rather. That's what the team is going to be.
The Seattle Overcast.
That's going to be the name of the team. For people,
that's almost the easiest thing to do. If you're from there, you know what that is.
Yeah.
You know what that is.
What was the talk amongst other owners, hockey people there, about Seattle?
Slam dunk.
Why?
It's a growing city. They love their hockey. They've got money.
Smart population.
I wasn't almost like sitting there giving the cash money sign with his hand. I'm not going to do that first. You build up to it, Amel. Come on. Don't you know anything about building up the answer? it's a wealthy area. It's got lots of money. I know that one of the things they were really worried about was the amount of teams they've got there. They've got the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. The basketball will be back at some point. They've got the University of Washington. You know, they haven't always been great at their main revenue sports lately, but people are still interested. It's a big MLS city. The Sounders are a good team. Yep. And even though the Mariners are tearing down, they've got a presence. That was one of the things that really worried them. But look, once they got the arena done, the other governors and owners were telling me it was full steam ahead. They couldn't charge into Seattle fast enough.
It is an interesting market, and a lot was made initially and will continue to be made about this rivalry with Vancouver. Back when the Western League used to be a pro loop, Seattle, Portland Buckaroos, Vancouver Canucks. This is, of course, before 1970 expansion when Vancouver became part of the NHL. I mean, that was like that Western loop.
It was good hockey.
It was excellent hockey. It was fantastic. And that was one of the big rivals. Those three teams, you know, really mixed well. And I think a lot of us, hockey observers, waiting for a cross-border rivalry to really happen. Like, listen, a couple of days ago, we just saw the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres play. And it's been a number of years since those two teams played a meaningful hockey game where both teams were amongst the top in the NHL, the QEW rivalry.
I know I'm a Toronto guy, so I'm biased because I live here, but the league is a better place when those two cities hate each other.
100% agree, and it's a better league when...
And those fans are killing each other in the stands. It's just fantastic.
Listen, you looked at that game, and it was half Maple Leafs fans, half Buffalo Sabres fans. It was a bizarre dynamic, but there it was. I think we're really waiting for some good hockey hatred to happen between Winnipeg and Minnesota, and we keep inching closer and closer, and now we'll have another cross-border.
2 weeks ago, we had...
I know.
An out of the 80s battle of Alberta.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm talking about cross border, like where it has that Canada United States dynamic.
Yeah.
Like Toronto, Buffalo, you have that. Winnipeg, Minnesota, you're starting to have that. And sure, why not? On the West Coast, Vancouver Canucks and the Seattle Sasquatch or whatever you're going
to
call it.
Thanks to Nick at the press conference. They started sniping at each other.
I know. Great
good.
Question, Nicky. Right away, you start getting them sniping at each other.
Nick Kiprios, Hockey Night in Canada. Question is for Todd. We often speak about the Battle of Ontario, Battle of Alberta. Do you have a message to the Vancouver Canuck fans and what they can expect out of a Seattle team in the Battle of the Northwest?
Well, Vancouver and Seattle share so much in common. Two absolutely glorious cities right on the water with a backdrop of mountains. And I think that from a civic standpoint, this is going to create this incredible connection to our city sister, only 100 miles, 130 miles to the north, or approximately 170 kilometers, I believe. But there's going to be a built-in rivalry. And, you know, I don't want to stoke the flames here because those guys are my friends, but bring it on. We can't wait. That's going to be an intense rivalry. And that might be the one night I walk in the locker room and say to the boys, give it a little more tonight, guys. Let's go.
Anything cross-border, count me in. Anything that has that U.S.-Canada dynamic tension, count me in.
It'll be interesting because Vancouver fans count themselves as Seattle fans in a lot of ways. They love the Seahawks. Now, the Blue Jays have become really popular, but for a lot of time, a lot
Jays
of them
fans
like
go
the
to...
Mariners, but they like the Mariners.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting because they've latched on to Seattle's major sports teams that Vancouver doesn't have. When Seattle really came on the radar before the last expansion that Vegas got, they went to the Aquilinis, the league did, and just said, you know, what do you think? And they loved it. They were on side from the beginning.
What should we read into the start date for Seattle?
Look, they talked construction, and I do think that's a factor, but we all know that there's a labor issue here too. I had a player who texted me after the announcement and said, well, too bad it's not 2020. And I said, well, they're not going to let you use it as a pressure point.
Not
and he
a chance.
Goes, well, you know, you can't blame us for trying. So they don't want to talk about labor on the day that a team gets announced, but everybody knows that's a big part of what that is.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting if you saw Irfan Ghaffar's interview with Dave Tippett. Tippett came right out and said that he didn't like the idea of a prolonged road trip to start their first season. The team had offered that. We'll go away on
the
road and make sure the building's ready in 2020. And Tippett made a good point. He said, look, Las Vegas played two games on the road, and they came home and played seven at home. They went 6-1. It set the tone for their whole season. So we don't want to get in a situation where we're unsure at the start. We're better off to move it back a year and make sure our competitive advantage is not taken away, and we expect to have a very good team out of the gate.
I thought that was very fair.
It's an interesting comment, too, specifically coming from someone who's been in the NHL for as long as Dave Tippett has, because there is a feeling amongst some teams that when you have a hockey team that has a whole lot of different faces in it, like when a team really turns itself over in the offseason and they bring in six or seven new guys, one of the best things for that team is a road trip because they're forced to stay together. And you're looking at an expansion team like Seattle. And this is what I said about Vegas, too, when I looked at the schedule. Like, man, they're playing a lot of games at home. Like, wouldn't it be better for that team to be out on the road, get to know one another, where you're forced to bond, forced to be with each other? That blows up with Vegas last year. But the common wisdom had always been, if you have a whole bunch of new faces on your team, early, get out on the road. Mm-hmm. Get these guys to know one another. You mentioned Dave Tippett. What is he going to do? What's his role going to be?
He's going to be... If you look at the role now, Murray Craven has left Vegas.
Yeah.
But when Murray Craven was in Vegas before George McPhee got there, it was a lot of, here's what you have to know about the hockey world and the hockey culture. And if you're building a practice facility, this is what you have to look at, or your main facility. Here's what your dressing room should look at. Here's what your players like. Here's the kind of people you should be thinking about hiring. It's that kind of thing. It's your hockey consultant.
You don't think he wants to coach?
No, I don't. I don't think he does. He'll never admit it, and I understand it because he doesn't believe in talking about stuff like this. I think he may have had two opportunities to coach this year. Two of the teams that have changed their coaches.
And turned them down.
And obviously. He said no. It's That's funny. My read on the situation.
Yeah.
I think he's had two opportunities, and I think he said no. And so now you get... some time to breathe, see what this is like. Who knows? Maybe in 3 years he'll feel differently. Again, like I said, we could all be hit by a bus in 3 years.
Sure.
Maybe in 3 years he feels differently, but sense I get right now is he's very happy where he wants to be, and I think he's got an extension there too. So there's no reason to go anywhere.
Just as an aside, exchange emails last week with Dave Andrews of the American Hockey League about what does this mean for the AHL, and they're already in talks with the Seattle group, and they're looking at not a shared situation. Mm-hmm. As we all know, Vegas shared Chicago with the St. Louis Blues. This is going to be very much a Seattle has an American Hockey League team.
Talk it's in California.
Is that right?
Hey? Yes.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. So that's that from the AHL level. Moving to the Central, the Arizona Coyotes. Now, the cynic in me says...
I can't believe there's a cynical bone in your body.
There is one. It's very small. It's getting smaller by the day. Trust me, as I become more optimistic as I age.
Usually it goes the other way.
I know. I used to turn into Stadler and Waldorf, but for some reason I'm becoming more optimistic the closer I get to the crematorium. But the cynic in me says Arizona. The Arizona Coyotes will never play a game in the Central. The Houston Coyotes might, but the Arizona Coyotes will never play a game there. Anything behind that?
You weren't the only one who thought that. Bill Daly did his best, the deputy commissioner, to throw cold water on that down there. He said one thing doesn't have anything to do with the other. It's the one that makes the most sense, right?
Yeah.
And I'll get to how Arizona feels about this in a second. Look at it from the league's point of view. It's the one that makes the most sense. You're not splitting up the three California teams. You're not moving one of the three Canadian teams. You're certainly not moving Vancouver if the whole reason you've got Seattle in the league is to give them a rival. So that leaves you Vegas, or that leaves you Arizona. You're not moving Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves you Arizona, which is, and part of the reason is the time zone, and you put them there. Very late in this process, the current owner of the Coyotes, Andrew Barroway, raised objections. And he was pretty upset about it after the meeting when they ended on Tuesday. But the league said, too late, too far, no more, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
There is one potential hurdle here. And that is that it's been reported that the Coyotes may be sold. And I did hear confirmation of those rumors down in the Board of Governors. There's somebody looking at buying the team. And one of the rumors going around is whoever that person is, they want to stay in the Pacific. Now, as you said, you've got 3 years to sort this out. I don't know what the answer is. I don't even know if the NHL will agree to that.
Right.
But there certainly is a little speed bump here that may not have been there, although you've got 3 years to sort it out.
Arizona not thrilled about this one.
I don't think
stretch.
They aren't. The current owner isn't. The rumbling at the Board of Governors that whoever the new owner is, he or she has said they would prefer to stay in the Pacific Division.
Backing up to Seattle, the group itself, Jerry Bruckheimer has talked about, and we've heard this from Bonderman as well, Nywicki, this idea of community. This can't just be a hockey team.
Right.
This has to be, you know, more sheets in Seattle. This has to be a big hockey community around this hockey team.
Yep.
Bruckheimer has talked about a USHL team. Bruckheimer has talked about, well, why isn't there a, you know, Western-based U.S. development program here? So he's talked about these minor hockey, you know, mm-hmm. growing. That's the way you grow the game. Do you know what their plans are outside of the NHL team and what they need to do or what they're planning on doing outside of just here's the new Seattle NHL team?
I don't. I don't have an answer to that question. I would hope they would go to a guy like Russ Farwell, though, who's been the GM of the Western Hockey League team, the Thunderbirds, for a long time. Nobody knows that market better than he does. I would hope they would go to him and talk to him about it. I mean, yesterday you're just looking at the specific plans. You're looking at starting the season, which year, what the name is. We're all already gossiping about who's going to be the general manager. That kind of stuff I didn't get as much into.
Who are the names? GMs are bandied about the obvious Ken Holland.
I mean, you could throw a lot of names out there, but the two big names that, you know, you hear are, and you've got to think the NHL is going to want somebody with experience because it works so well in Vegas. Ken Holland, Kelly McCrimmon is another one that comes out. And I put those in my blog today, and somebody just said, don't count out like a guy like Mike Fiuta, who knows Tim Nywicki very well. So those were kinds of the names that got thrown to me. But, you know, one thing that Todd Nywicki said is, we can take a time out now. We can see, is there somebody that we really want to watch for a while or somebody we want to learn more about? If they were starting in 2020, they were going to hire somebody this spring. Now, might still happen, mm-hmm. but no guarantee that it happens.
Is there any guarantee that green will be involved in the colors? I've always maintained there's not enough of the color green in the NHL.
There has to be. How can you do Seattle and not do green?
The one thing that I come back to, they're building up so much about this rivalry between Vancouver and Seattle. Vancouver's a green team.
Maybe you can have whoever wins the season series gets to wear green.
See, I would love it. But then there was the jersey that was shown, which was red and black, which is, I know, from a different minor hockey organization.
Maybe they
but
gave it away. I got to think there's going to be green.
I would hope so. More green in the NHL, please.
Well, how many Seattle teams don't wear green? I mean, the Mariners do. Seahawks do.
They all do.
The Supersonics did.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Sounders look like. They wear green? Amel. That's the first useful thing Amel has ever done in this podcast.
MLS thumbs up. Attaboy, Delich. Yes, Scoops.
You know what? I'm not sure the University of Washington wears green. I think they're more like blue or purple.
T-Birds are green. Everett Silvertips.
Only professionals count Amel.
what is
some of those university players are getting paid more than the professionals, I bet.
Someone listening to this from Quebec City, what should they be thinking?
You know, how much trouble do I want to get in this week?
Lots. Go for it.
I have spent a lot of time thinking about Bettman's answer about Ottawa. So the Board of Governors over 2 days. There's a meeting Monday afternoon. There's a meeting Tuesday morning. And as everyone knows, Tuesday afternoon they announce Seattle. Monday he does a scrum after the Board of Governors meeting, and he's asked about Ottawa. I think our compatriot Louis Jean from TVA, mm-hmm. the man who is much better looking than all the rest of us, asked the question.
True. Jerk.
And the commissioner said, I'm disappointed, but I understand it's a complicated process. And he wasn't offering up much more than that. So you know the commissioner well by now, right? If he's being tight-lipped on something, there's a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think there were three. Number one, he doesn't want anything to overshadow the Seattle announcement the next day.
Sure.
He's smart enough to know that. Number two, obviously that Ottawa situation is in a state of flux. He knows things he doesn't want to say because there's no guarantees with what's going to happen there right now. Number three, he knows Ottawa is a tinderbox. All he's got to say is one thing, and it's a five-alarm blaze.
Yep.
So he doesn't want the gasoline anywhere near there. The only thing I know about Ottawa right now is that they don't know what the future is. They have no idea where this is going to go. They are disappointed, as the commissioner said. They aren't always thrilled with Eugene Melnyk, but they don't think this one is his fault. They really thought they had a plan for the franchise. And the other thing is now, and one of my buddies who lives up there has season tickets to them, and he says they're all of a sudden talking about what a great place the Canadian Tire Center is to watch games. And I get that. It's because they know they're going to be there for at least 4 years, including this one. And why dump all over the place where you're asking people to come? You've got to sell it. Look, if you're from Quebec City, I get you're disappointed, and I totally understand. I think every Canadian wants to see Quebec City get a team. I just wonder if the worst-case scenario happens in Ottawa, they need Quebec City open.
Did Quebec City or does Quebec City seem to you to be more of a relocation market than an expansion market?
You've heard that one before. Yeah, and I would think so. Look, you know, what's the dollar at today? It's down.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago, Vegas got a team for $500 million U.S.
Now it's $650.
Seattle just got a team for $650. What's the next one?
Mm-hmm.
$800?
I think it depends on the market. You speculated about another GTA team.
So 800 U.S. is what, a billion Canadian? I know the Peladeaux have lettuce, but do they grow lettuce that big?
Listen, it's a wonderful place. It's a great rink, and it houses the Quebec Ramparts of the QMJHL. You know, I always, you know, whenever I go to Hamilton, I always look at the rink, and you think, ah, what could have been
at
Copps. Mm-hmm. And Centre Vidéotron, you think of the same thing when you drive by it now. You know, that was not built for the Quebec Ramparts. It was built for an NHL team.
Yep.
And the commissioner saying that that's it for expansion. If I'm a Quebec hockey fan, am I thinking right now our only shot at an NHL team right now is relocation?
You have to believe that right now. That's the only thing you can believe. And the fact that the commissioner said as little as he did about Ottawa says to me it's like the duck. It looks so calm on the water,
yes,
but it's paddling underneath. Like crazy underneath it. There's a lot going on there. And I'm not saying, and please don't say that I'm saying that Ottawa is going to move to Quebec, but I can see, this is my opinion, purely my opinion. I can see that they are preparing for anything there. They just don't know right now.
More on the Seattle situation, the expansion franchise in the weeks and months to come here on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Meanwhile, other takeaways from the BOG?
Cap $83 million. I think that's kind of what everybody expected. I don't think that's a big surprise.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you're around that many people, I mean, I know most of it is just rumors and you discard it and throw away.
You know what? It's a good thing that you mentioned about that. How many people are talking about expanding the playoffs?
A lot more now.
We know that Bettman hates it. He came on the podcast in that really good interview, and I really liked that part of the conversation where he explained why he shot it down. There's a lot of teams that want it. They want it. Now, we know he runs the league with an iron hand, so he's got 600 votes.
Yeah.
I don't know how they get him to change his mind, but they want it. And I thought the thing that Nick uncovered about shortening the intermissions from 18 minutes to 15 is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a TV-driven one. I think that's NBC. They want games. Let's go. Flood the ice. Get these guys back out there.
this may seem like sacrilege to a lot of hockey fans, but just hear me out on this one. When I read that in 31 Thoughts, the blog this week, I thought to myself, has there ever been any conversation or any concert about changing three periods to four quarters? And here's why. The last 5 minutes worth of ice.
If it changes to anything, it's going to be two halves.
No chance of four quarters.
No way. They don't want stoppages.
Two halves, that ice will be so chewed. Yeah, yeah. That's why you don't do it.
That's why it's not happening. Remember they floated that trial balloon in the New York Times about, geez, I was at the Fan at the time, so it's got to be about 20 years ago.
Which one?
Joe LaPointe, who was a great sports writer for the New York Times, wrote an article about hockey maybe going to two halves. And it was a total trial balloon. As a reporter, you know what that is. That's someone saying, I need you to write this because we actually are thinking about it and we want to see what the reaction to it is.
Mm-hmm.
And people went bananas. But four quarters, like, they don't want it to be any slower. It's about the millennials. It's about people's attention spans. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, quick 15 minutes of break.
Let's
you got
go.
Two bonies out there, zip, zip. And mm-hmm. you have better ice because you don't have that last 5 minutes of choppy ice and bad passes to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a chance to sell more suds.
Well, that's the problem because you have to have short intermissions. And you can't, and that would,
more of them.
No, because the lines are long and or the wait time is long. That's what they yelled back at the NBC guys apparently was, we need to sell beer. And in shorter intermissions, one of the things that I've often heard is there's a lot of teams out there that hate Saturday afternoon games or Sunday afternoon games. Years ago, and I don't know if the NHLPA still feels this way, they told me they hated afternoon games. And I said, why? And they said, beer sales are way down.
Way down, yeah.
Way down. And so that's a big deal, a concession, food, all that stuff. And the shorter your intermissions, the less you're going to sell because you're going to be sitting in there. And how many rings do we go to where the lineups are a mile and a half long? That difference between 15 and 18 minutes is the difference between you getting something and mm-hmm. missing a few seconds of play. So it is going to be a challenge, but I understand why they want to do it.
Trade rumors floating around, BOG?
Kessel.
Yeah.
But I think Pittsburgh kind of dipped the toe in and pulled it back.
After beating Colorado 6-3?
No, I just think that they, you know, he's still having a good year. He's got 29 points in 26 games. Yeah. But I don't like to rip Kessel. I think he gets ripped enough. And the more I learn about him, I just wonder if it's like a not everybody is socially comfortable. And I think that's it. And I don't like to make fun of people for that reason. I think he's a really talented guy. And I simply think if you look at his history, it's 4 or 5 years in one place, and then you move on. And
hired gun, here's some goals.
And, you know, is it possible Pittsburgh's getting to that point? And also, if they really are going to change themselves, they have to trade something like that. So I think they looked at it, and then they pulled it back. The other one is Chicago. You know, Stan Bowman was at Los Angeles, Arizona on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
They had their cap guy on their last trip. They had two people to see Vancouver, L.A. They had three people to see Calgary, Dallas. Then they had two people the next night to see, was it Edmonton, L.A.?
Edmonton, Dallas?
Edmonton, L.A. after the Vancouver game.
Okay.
You know, they've seen a lot of the Kings. And, you know, Bowman's made a lot of deals. He's busy. I think he's working it. And the other one I do think is I wrote it today. And somebody kind of tipped me over the edge a bit more after it appeared in the blog. And that is Chicago likes Sam Gagne. Before he committed to Vancouver in the summer of 2017, he visited Chicago and they liked him. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer for Vancouver to do it. But I could bet that they're fighting over money probably. He's got another year under his contract. But I do think the Blackhawks have some interest in Sam Gagne. The other one that's
bring him into power play.
Yeah,
not unlike what he did with
give
Columbus.
Give them some juice. They need some juice. But they're looking at D. And if they're looking at L.A., they're looking at D there, no question. And the other one I think is really interesting is Chuck Fletcher had his introductory media conference in Philadelphia today. And a couple of guys were telling me that Hextall, as much as Hextall loved Wayne Simmonds, and he loves Wayne Simmonds, he was not willing to give him term. And now I'm curious to see Chuck Fletcher, who I think also has a lot of time for Wayne Simmonds.
Yeah.
Does he feel differently?
Fletcher comes in almost with, It almost seemed as if the job interview was, how aggressive are you going to be at moving players?
It's funny. He came out on Monday night in Philly. He spoke to a couple of their beat reporters. I saw Sam Carschidi and Dave Isaac wrote about it. And he was saying, no, you don't. I'm going to take my time with Dave Haxtell. I'm going to take my time with the players and see what I've got here. Meanwhile, all the other teams are telling me at the Board of Governors that the Flyers want to make big trades right away. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going to happen there. The thing that's interesting that too is that I heard they interviewed Bill Zito by video conference.
Yep.
And also possibly Dave Nonis by video conference. So we all thought that this was Chuck Fletcher's job. It really was Chuck Fletcher's job. If they bring you in person and they interview the other people on video, chances are you're the favorite.
Peek behind the curtain a little bit. There's always the preferred candidate. And then when other prospective general managers get interviewed, how much of that is doing favors?
There's some of that.
So that person now becomes a finalist for a position. That person is someone who's now been interviewed and you get into those conversations. That's got to be part of it.
There is some of that. But I think there's a danger to that too, Jeff. You become, quote unquote, the finalist. There's one guy who periodically has said, can you throw my name out there? And after a while, I said to him, do you really think that that's good? That you're constantly out there and not getting the jobs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people will hear that. I always ask if someone, and not too many guys ask for me to do that, but if someone asks, I say, are you really a candidate? Is this a job you want? I'll usually check. But there's one guy who's pretty persistent. And after a while, I said to him, are you sure? Because, you know, there's two things I believe. Number one, you don't want to be that guy who's always a finalist and loses.
Yeah.
And number two, it's the Doug McClain theory of everybody who ends up my blog isn't one of my sources. Because Doug will go through my blog and he'll list, oh, so you talked to that guy. That guy told you that. I know there's a lot of people out there, scarily, who think like Doug McClain. If he's thinking that, I don't like people thinking that.
It's good.
I don't. Have I ever told a story about the player in the dressing room?
No.
Okay, so this is why I'm goofy about that stuff. So there was a player I got along with really well, and he blew me off about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe even longer than that, when he came to Toronto. And I was like, okay, what did I say? Because anytime that happens, I'm thinking, okay, I said something that really offended the guy. I just can't remember what it was. And 2 days later, he calls me. He says, I'm really sorry about that, but I have to explain what happened. And I said, okay. And so he tells me that he gets called in the GM's office, and the GM pulls out a copy of my blog, and he says, you know, you're quoted in Elliot Friedman's blog here. Is that you? And he goes, yeah, I said that. No problem. And then he pulled out a copy of the blog from like 2 weeks later where there had been something critical about the team. And I quoted the source. He goes, is this you? And it wasn't. But the player was totally shaken. He said, I don't even want to be seen around you right now. So ever since then, I've become fanatical about protecting that kind of thing.
Because I've seen you put that on the blog before. No one quoted in this blog was a source.
Because, and you know whose fault that was? It was Tyler Dello's fault. Because he started writing and tweeting that whenever I see a one source story, I assume, and someone else is quoted in it, I assume that they're the anonymous source. And people started believing that. And we all know that nothing that guy says is believable. So that's what happened. And so I said, I started using that line.
Awesome. We have to step away. Quick pause, come back with some Ask 31s on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the GMC Terrain. With cargo space that fits the entire family's hockey bags and available all-wheel drive to keep them safe on icy roads, the GMC Terrain is a compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. GMC Terrain, we are professional grade. We shall finish up, Elliot, with some hashtag Ask 31s, because last week we were delinquent and did not do any
Hit me.
Bardowski. Freege, I've heard you say a couple of times that when you were first starting out, you didn't know how to watch practice, quote, the right way. What have you learned since then? What specifically do you look for now when watching?
Who does a coach talk to? When do they stop practice? How often do they blow a drill dead because they're not happy with the way that it's run? When they're talking, who's listening and who isn't as a group?
Yep.
This is a good one. This was one that Healy taught me. How many times you do a drill where the majority of the team is standing around? Is everybody doing something? Or are five people doing something and everybody's standing around for long periods of time? Obviously, there's going to be situations where you have to watch the way it's done or somebody has to stand off. But is there a lot of inactivity? How fast are the practices? Is it really crisp? You know, in the Andrew Ferentz podcast you're going to hear next week, he talked about when he practiced with the Bruins, those were NHL game quality practices. They went at each other hard. How hard do people go at each other? Craig Simpson, do you get into good habits? He loved watching Detroit practice under Babcock because the players always stopped at the net. They took a shot, the other guys on the drill, they stopped at the net. Things like that. But the key thing is watching the coach. What's he happy with? What's he not happy with? Who's he talking to? What's his tone like? That's all that kind of stuff is the right kind of stuff.
You winked at something that I've always found really interesting when watching practice. And sometimes it doesn't happen. You just don't have one of these guys on the team. But you watch for who the drill buster is. The guy that's constantly messing up the drills, because few things infuriate players more at practice than the guy that can't get the drill right.
Well, that's the one who gets the drill blown dead, right? That's
how I figured it out. Who's the drill buster on the team? Because generally, that becomes the guy that nobody wants to play with. And then casual fans are like, how come no one wants to play with this guy? How come this guy's moving down the lineup? Well, it's because he's a drill buster in practice.
That's a great
one. Nobody wants to play with him.
That's a great one. Here's another one that I remember a player told me. Said that he knew that Doug Gilmore won out of Toronto, because when Doug Gilmore was really happy in Toronto, they would be listening to Pat Burns and he would be jabbing Nikolai Borshevsky or someone with his stick, like just to cause a problem while the player was supposed to watch a drill.
Yeah.
He was just being an annoying little pain in the butt when he was during practice. Said when Doug Gilmore stopped doing that, that's when he knew how unhappy he was and he wanted to go. Like, so small, you're looking for small changes like that.
From Don, in an off season, this is good. In an off season where Detroit has an opportunity to sign Coach Q, hire Yzerman as GM, win the lottery, and draft Hughes, and sign Eric Carlson as a UFA, how many of those actually happen? Please say all.
I refuse to predict the draft lottery. Yzerman, I think we all believe that's going to happen, or could happen, very likely to happen. Quenneville, it's possible. I believe his family still lives in Windsor. And if there's any team that he would consider, I think, picking that's not near the top right now, Detroit would probably be the one I would wager on. Eric Carlson, this is going to be a fascinating second half of the story season. When he was traded to San Jose, I think we all assumed that he and Doug Wilson did something in the pocket that was going to be agreed to after he was eligible for the full 8 years, and that was right at the trade deadline. I don't think anybody really believes that anymore. I shouldn't say anybody, but I don't think too many people believe that anymore. It's been a really hard year for him, for that team. I could see it. Now, you're asking me this on December the 5th, right? There's a long time between now and then. But as we sit here today taping this podcast on December 5th, how can you not consider the possibility that he's going to be on the open market?
Yeah. Any chance he goes back to Ottawa?
How could you do that? There's so much. As long as Eugene Melnyk owns the team, no. And that's not even a shot at Melnyk. It's, why would you? Why would they do it? Why would he do it? There's so much bad blood.
There is a feeling that the number that was offered from Ottawa may never be there again. And if that number is still there, that might be the only place he gets it.
But would Ottawa still put that number on?
That's the question.
I can't see it unless there was a total regime change.
Some leftovers from last week.
Both sides.
some leftovers from last week we didn't get to. From Benjamin, what do you think about this small rule change to increase scoring? No more neutral zone faceoffs. The offending team who made the hand pass, shot the puck out of play, was offside, etc., always has to take a D-zone faceoff with no line change, similar to an icing. Get rid of the dots in the neutral zone.
I have no problem with that. I think it's a good idea.
Okay, another thing, Elliot, on faceoffs. This from, that's a good handle, Bim Jenning. What's up with the linesmen on faceoffs? Too much talking, and it looks like they want the attention on themselves a lot. Just drop the puck. It takes me out of the game some nights.
Who's this, Don Cherry?
Don's always complained about that.
I think most people would agree with him.
But do you want a clean draw?
Yes.
Then you can't just drop the puck. There is one way you can get a clean draw. Go old school. Everyone talks about being a purist. Oh, no, I'm a purist.
You know this is big because you can't see this on the radio part of this, but Jeff Merrick took off his glasses before answering the question.
I love when people talk about being purists because I always come back to this example. If you are a purist, oh, no, I'm a traditionalist. I'm a purist. Do your face-offs with the puck already on the ice. Have we talked about this before? Do your face-offs. Linesman is... I dropped this one on Jason York on ice surfing the other day.
And what did he say?
He loved it. He loved the idea because it gets the linesman out of the circle, out of the way, and it forces players to line up their sticks properly. Start with it on the ice and blow the whistle. Linesman doesn't even have to be in the zone. Why is the linesman in the zone? Call offsides. We have to be in the offensive zone for it. So the referees are there to call goals.
If you really want to stop the problem and have the puck going fast, how many faceoff penalties did they call last year after the new year?
How many?
I think three.
This was supposed to be the hurry-up faceoff league.
Or whatever. If you want face-offs to be done properly, call the penalty.
Yeah, there were only a handful.
Almost mad because someone turned on the photocopier.
And it's going to bleed into the audio for the podcast. That is how much
I just want everybody who's hearing this knowing that Amal is seething over the photocopier.
No one can hear it, but we can.
We can hear it.
This one comes from Chun. Two questions. We'll end on this one. Should teams be able to trade cap space for prospects or players? And why don't teams trade coaches? A few years, Vancouver and New York fired Vigneault and Torts. Why not try a coach trade? Quebec and the Rangers
did. Yes, Michel Bergeron for Daniel Dore, right?
It was first-round pick turned to Daniel Dore. Yes. That was Phil Esposito was the general manager who did that one.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see coach trades, and we don't, and there is no allowance for teams trading players or prospects.
I have
for
no
cap space.
Problem with teams trading cap space. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but I've got no problem with it.
I love the idea of cap cash. I just love that whole concept.
Berkey was one of the guys who really argued for being able to retain salary, and that took an extra CBA before it happened.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that idea either. If you listen to this podcast, you know I'm not as chaos oriented as Jeff is. But I'm interested in trying out ideas that will potentially make the game better. I don't think you're ever wrong for trying out something, unless it's the Thanksgiving episode of WKRP. Because if you think turkeys can fly, you've got a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Close on trading coaches. Do we ever see another crazy Phil Esposito trading a coach?
Why not?
Why not? We know it'll never happen.
Why wouldn't it happen?
We've gone this entire podcast for the first time in I don't know how long and not said anything about William Nylander because it's done. Do you have a closing thought on that saga that consumed, certainly the second intermission on Hockey Night in Canada all season long and this podcast?
Thank God it's over.
Surprise it took so long?
No.
Surprise it got to where it did?
No.
Nothing shocked you about any of it?
No.
This all went according to plan.
Well,
this is how the Rubik's Cube was going to go.
The one thing that I did right is that one GM thinks that some guys really screwed around with the Leafs.
Yeah. Whoa, no, we'll pay 7.5.
Yes.
Oh, no, he might be 8.
He thinks that, and it's not tampering because he was a free agent. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
But they think that some guys really screwed around with Toronto.
On that, we'll wrap. Don't forget, Monday, the podcast with Andrew Ference comes out. Oilers fans, attention. Bruins fans, attention. You will want to specifically, as fans of those organizations, listen to the podcast. And if you're just a hockey fan, Ference is a really thoughtful and interesting guy. So check that one out on Monday. In the meantime, mentioning William Nylander, as Elliot mentions, the saga is over. With that, we present Peter, Bjorn, and John from Stockholm. This is Up Against the Wall. Big thanks to our producer, Emil Delich, as always, doing this podcast and, of course, the podcast with Ference, which comes out on Monday. Enjoy this one. You'll hear from us again at the beginning of next week. Have a great weekend. Guess I should have come.